नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्दस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं तदाति स्वपदांतिकं वंदेहं श्री गुरु श्रीयुता पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते सप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानु सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वांछा कल्पतरूप्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
लास्ट वीक आई डिस्ट्रीब्यूटेड द श्लोक शीट। We will recite the shlokas. Anybody? This right, So from the mother. We'll recite from the sixth chapter. The sixth chapter, 19th verse, 19th verse till the 8th chapter end. Sixth chapter, 19th verse till the 9th chapter, 29th verse. We'll recite the first one. We'll recite together so that. You will recite two times each verse.
Vivyastavamrutakatodavahastrilokya Padavanejasarita shamalani hantum Anushravam shrutibirangrijamangasangais Tirtadvayam shuchishadastavupasprishanti विव्यस्तपामृतकतोदवहास्त्रिलोक्या పాదావణేజ సరిత శమలాని హంతుం ఆనుశ్రవం శృతిభిరంగ్రిజమంగ సంగైస్ తీర్థద్వయం శుచిషదస్తవుపస్పృశంతి తవ విక్రీడితం కృష్ణ నృణాం పరమమంగళం కర్ణపీయూషమాసాద్య త్యజంత్యన్యస్పృహాం జనా తవ విక్రీడితం కృష్ణ నృణాం పరమమంగళం కర్ణపీయూషమాసాద్య త్యజంత్యన్యస్పృహాం జనా త్వయోపగుప్త స్రగ్గంధ వాసోలంకార చర్చిత ఉచ్ఛిష్ట భోజినో దాసా తవ మాయాం జయేమహి త్వయోపగుప్త స్రగ్గంధ వాసోలంకార చర్చిత ఉచ్ఛిష్ట భోజినో దాసా తవ మాయాం జయేమహి తస్మాద్భవంతమణవద్యమనంతపారం సర్వజ్ఞం ఈశ్వరమకుంఠ వికుంఠదిష్ణ్యం నిర్విణ్ణదీరహముఖే వృజినాభితప్తో నారాయణం నరసకం శరణం ప్రపద్యే తస్మాద్భవంతమణవద్యమనంతపారం సర్వజ్ఞమీశ్వరమకుంఠ వికుంఠదిష్ణ్యం నిర్విణ్ణదీరహముఖే వృజినాభితప్తో నారాయణం నరసకం శరణం ప్రపద్యే యః ప్రాప్య మానుషం లోకం ముక్తిద్వారం అపావృతం గృహేషు కగవత్సక్తః తం ఆరుడచ్యుతం విదుః యః ప్రాప్య మానుషం లోకం ముక్తిద్వారం అపావృతం గృహేషు కగవత్సక్తః తం ఆరుడచ్యుతం విదుః తావజ్జితేంద్రియో న స్యాత్ విజాత్ విజితాన్యేంద్రియ పుమాన్ న జయేత్ రసనం యావత్ జితం సర్వం జితేరసే తావత్ జితేంద్రియో న స్యాత్ విజితాయేంద్రియ పుమాన్ న జయేత్ రసనం యావత్ జితం సర్వం జితేరసే సంతం సమీపే రమణం రతిప్రదం విత్తప్రదం నిత్యమిహం విహాయ అకామకం దుఃఖభయాదిశోక మోహప్రదం తుచ్చమహం భజేన్య సంతం సమీపే రమణం రతిప్రదం విత్తప్రదం నిత్యమిమం విహాయ అకామదం దుఃఖభయాదిశోక మోహప్రదం తుచ్చమహం భజేన్య జిహ్వైకతోముం అపకర్షతి కర్హి తర్షా శిష్ణోన్యతస్త్వగుదరం శ్రవణం కుతశ్చేత్ గ్రాణోన్యతశ్చపలదృక్వచ కర్మ శక్తిర్ బహ్వ్యః సపత్న్య ఇవ గేహపతిం లుణంతి జిహ్వైకతోముమపకర్షతి కర్హి తర్షా శిష్ణోన్యతస్త్వగుదరం శ్రవణం కుతశ్చేత్ గ్రాణోన్యతశ్చపలదృక్వచ కర్మ శక్తిర్ బహ్వ్యః సపత్న్య ఇవ గేహపతిం లుణంతి లబ్ధ్వా సుదుర్లభమిదం బహు సంభవాంతే మానుష్యమర్తదమనిత్యమభీహధీర తూర్ణం యతేతనపతే తను మృత్యుయావన్ నిశ్రేయసాయ విషయ కలు సర్వతస్యాత్ लब्ध्वा सुदुर्लभमिदं बहु संभवान्ते मानुष्यमर्तदमनित्यमपि कदीर तूर्णं यते तणपते तनुमृत्युयावन् निःश्रेयसाय विषय खलु सर्वतः स्यात्।
So every week you can bring these sheets. Those who are not received the sheets, they can collect the sheets. Last week we had distributed this. So now we'll go ahead with the. So today we'll be want to. Today we'll complete this chapter. So last week we discussed, so Lord Krishna, he spoke to Uddhava because Uddhava, when he approached Lord Krishna, he said, I am such a foolish person and it is very difficult for me to follow your instructions. So please guide me so that I can easily carry out your instructions. And Uddhava identified himself as a foolish person who is absorbed in the conception of me and mine. And then Uddhava actually glorified Krishna, how he is the perfect master. He said that Vaktaram Isha Vibhudesh, said that there cannot be a better teacher than you in all the three worlds. Because even the other demigods, they are also Bahirartha Bhava. They are also actually absorbed in the bodily concept of life. So then Uddhava inquired like that. Krishna began answering by actually encouraging Uddhava. He said, Prayena Manuja Loke. So generally, you are considering yourself like a foolish person. But actually, you are more intelligent than even the best of the intelligent demigods. So Krishna said, even people who are less intelligent, even they can understand what is the highest benefit. They can understand the what is the real shreya, what is the highest benefit of a living entity on their own. They can deliver themselves by their own intelligence, and they can actually come to the conclusion of what is the highest benefit. Then he said that Atmano Guru Atmaiva, that sometimes a person can act as one's own spiritual master, because a person, by using Pratyaksha and Anumana, a person can understand what is the real benefit. In this way, a person can act as one's own spiritual master. So that is what he explained in the 20th verse. And then he said that in the human form of life, those people who are self-controlled are those who are free from envy, and those who are Sankhya Yoga Visharada, those who are well-versed in knowledge, and Sankhya Yoga Visharada means those who are not only well-versed in knowledge, but those who are also devoted to the Supreme Lord. Such people, they can actually, they can directly see me along with all my potencies. And then he explained how human form of life is actually most dear to him. And a person can see directly see me in the human form of life by using their intelligence and other faculties of perception to directly search for me through both apparent and indirectly ascertained symptoms. And then he described this philosophy, how a person, of course we also discussed, when Krishna is saying that a person can act as one's own spiritual master, it does not mean that a person actually, there is no need of a physical guru. We discussed those points, that when a person uses his intelligence from his higher nature, he can actually learned so many lessons by observing this world. He can understand how the material world is miserable, and then such a person actually comes to appreciate the value of a bona fide spiritual master. In fact, Madhvacharya says that if a person gives up the association of devotees, such a person will fall down, thinking that, oh, there is no need of a guru, there is no need of association. So then Krishna, he is actually telling a, he is giving an example of a person who actually adopted this particular process, how adopted by this method, how he learned so many lessons, how he accepted so many gurus. So he is telling the story of Avadhuta Brahmana. So once this Maharaj Yadu met this Avadhuta Brahmana, who was actually very young and learned and was very detached. And by seeing his disposition, Yadu Maharaj, he got so many doubts, and how he is actually so young and learned and he is just wandering fearlessly, but is completely detached. So Yadu Maharaj asked different questions to Avadhuta Brahmana. First he asked that, what is the source of your knowledge and why are you wandering like a, behaving as if you are a child? And then he said that generally people are interested in dharma, artha, kama and moksha. And they want to increase their lifespan and they want to increase their fame and enjoy material opulence. But like in your case, although you have all the capabilities, does anybody remember what is the paradox he pointed out in the character of Avadhuta Brahmana?
You are not an expert. You are not doing anything and not desiring to do anything.
You have got potency to advance in material life, but
still you are not doing anything about it. So then what else he asked? Then what are the other questions?
Ecstasy.
What is the source of your pleasure? Like you are wandering alone without any companions, but you are actually very happy. So what is the source of your pleasure? And one more question he asked. How is it that although you are young, but you are actually freed from the, you are remaining free from the burning fire of material desires? So then, when Maharaj Yadu asked these questions to Avadhuta Brahmana, then Avadhuta Brahmana, he tells that, actually by my intelligence I have taken shelter of so many gurus. The speciality of these gurus are, those gurus never spoke to him, but with his intelligence he took shelter of their gurus. So now, and then he describes the list of the 24 gurus. And what did he learn from them?
The science of
the self. So this is something interesting. So it means like if a person is actually focused on this self-realization, then whatever he looks, he actually learns lessons from those events as how to advance in self-realization. It's like in the first canto, when the sages headed by Shaunaka Rishi, when they answer question to Shuta Goswami, that we heard that Maharaj Parikshit simply punished Kali and he did not kill Kali who was torturing like a cow and a bull. And why did he only punish Kali? And then they added one more thing. Does anybody know, like, what did they asked this question and then they asked one more thing.
Who is responsible for
your... No, they said, please narrate all these incidents if they are related to Krishna. Yadi Krishna Katashrayam. Tat Katyatam Mahabhaga Yadi Krishna Katashrayam. Please describe all these events if they are related to Krishna. It's like, the nature of devotees is that they are focused on Krishna, like whatever they may try to see everything in relation to Krishna. They try to see everything in relation to self-realization. Just like a greedy person is always looking for like how a person can actually earn money in any situation. Maybe knowing that story of one old man was there and his sons they were very fed up with this, with their father, that their father was not, was still, although he was very old and he was very much attached to so many things. And they wanted to actually inspire him to develop some renunciation. So for that purpose, they took him to different holy places. But he was not at all getting any inspiration. And finally they brought him to actually Varanasi. And he saw that dead bodies were being burnt there. And then he started actually crying. So they felt, oh, we achieved the mission, success of your mission. But he said, actually whole light, I spent my whole life actually doing cloth business. If only I had known that there is so much a market for wood business, I would actually done wood business. Like, because he was attached to money, even when he saw the dead bodies, instead of developing a mood of renunciation, detachment, it's only in terms of money making. So here, this Brahmana is actually was seeing in terms of everything, he was learning about the science of the self from all these gurus. So now he starts describing what he learned from different gurus. So these 24 gurus are explained in this chapter and the 8th chapter and also in the 9th chapter. I think it goes, yeah, till the 9th chapter also. Sorry, I guess forget whether 9, but definitely 7th and 8th chapter, this 24 gurus are being described. So we'll go through each of these gurus and what he learned from them. 36th verse. Yato yad anushikshami.
Yato yad anushikshami.
Yatava nahu satmaja.
Yatava nahu satmaja.
Tattata purusha vyagra.
Tattata purusha vyagra.
Nibodha katayamite.
Nibodha katayamite.
Then listen, O son of Maharaj Yati. O tiger among men, as I explain to you what I have learned from each of these gurus.
So, see that Maharaj Yadu is, the Avadhut Brahmana is addressing as Purusha Vyagra, tiger among men. Krishna also addresses that.
18th
chapter. What's
that?
18th chapter. Says that Trivid, he says that Tyagohi Purusha Vyagra Trivida Samprakirtitaha. So tiger among men, now hear from me about the three kinds of renunciation. So we see that when we respect people, that actually opens their heart to hear the transcendental message. He's respecting him as like encouraging, oh, tiger among men. So now the first guru. So the first guru is, he learns from the earth. He learns three lessons from the earth. So these three lessons are described in 37th and 38th verse. So 37th verse. Bhutair apkramya manopi.
Bhutair apkramano pi.
Dhiro daiva vashanugai.
Dhiro daiva vashanugai.
Tadvidvan na chalen margat.
Tadvidvan na chalen margat.
Anvashiksham kshiter vratam.
So a person, even when harassed by other living beings, should understand that his aggressors are acting helplessly under the control of God, and thus he should never be distracted from the progress on his path, own path. This rule I have learned from the earth.
So the first thing he learns from the earth, the mother earth is called the symbol of tolerance. So he is learning the lesson of tolerance from mother earth. First lesson from Mother Earth. So although Mother Earth is actually attacked by so many aggressors, Mother Earth tolerates and understands it's her own karma. So similarly he says that although a person may get so many reversals in his life, one should accept it that it is because of my own past karma, and one should not become angry with them. One should consider them as an instrument of one's karma. and one should not be distracted from the progress of his own path. So if we see that the most, like if a person somehow learns this lesson of tolerance, like so many problems in life can be solved. That's the first instruction Krishna also speaks in the Gita, Matra Sparshastu Kaunteya. The verse before that, Krishna says about the bodily concept of life, Dehinosmi Nyatha Dehe. And then, after describing the bodily concept of life, then he says one has to tolerate the happiness and distress. So, first he gives the knowledge of the difference between the body and soul, and then he gives the process of tolerance. And when we follow this process of tolerance, then the next verse, Krishna says, we will get the realization. What is the next verse? Yamhina vyatayantyete purusham purusharshabha samadukka sukam dhiram sa amritatvaya kalpat. A person will attain liberation. So knowledge of the difference between the body and soul, and then when you actually apply that knowledge by practicing tolerance, then you actually get liberated. So that is how Krishna says. So when we talk about tolerance, so there are three steps formula. First is like we have to understand that it is our own karma. We have actually sown the seed. And then after accepting it as our own karma, then we have to do whatever is necessary on the practical level. Like somebody is trying to exploit us or trying to cheat us. The first accept that it is my own karma. I might have cheated somebody, so I am getting that reaction. Accept our own karma and then do, it's not that we just allow ourselves to be exploited. We do what is necessary in the practical level. And thirdly, we perform devotional service to completely eradicate the karma. These are the three steps.
What is the second step?
Do whatever is necessary on the practical level. But if we do the second step without following the first step, if we try to take action against that person without accepting this my own karma, because we have the bitterness towards that person, even when we actually, if we win over that person, we'll be miserable in our life. It's like that. So I'll take that. And then the third step is ultimately we have to perform devotional service to eradicate the karma. So the sense, so if we see that there are like three principles. One is like if you have, in order to practice tolerance, that first we have to accept that we have to accept the unavoidable. Like suppose the weather becomes, May month comes and becomes very hot. You have to accept the fact it is unavoidable. It's not, it will be like that. And then, after accepting the unavoidable, you also have to keep in mind the unavoidable is temporary. It is hot, but then after some time it will not be so hot. Unavoidable is temporary. And thirdly, after accepting the unavoidable and then after understanding the unavoidable is temporary, then we have to concentrate our energy on the inner change. Basically, we have to focus ourselves on Krishna by which we will get rich returns. The purpose of tolerance is ultimately to focus our mental energy on Krishna. There are many people who also tolerate, in the sense like, people from cultured background, they tolerate the shortcomings of others, they continue to live together. But then there's no focusing their energy on Krishna. So the purpose of tolerance is that if we do not tolerate, so much of our mental energy will be dissipated in fighting with other people's shortcomings. So we tolerate so that our mental energy is conserved, so that we can focus that, utilize that mental energy on Krishna. So that is the purpose of tolerance. So next verse also he learns from mountain and tree. They also represent the earth. So there are also different aspects of the earth. From mountain and tree he learns other lessons. Shashvat Pararta Sarveha Parartai Kanta Sambhavaha Sadhu Shiksheta Bhubhrutto Naga Shishya Paratmata.
A saintly person should learn from the mountain to devote all his effort to the service of others and to make the welfare of others to the sole reason for his existence. Similarly, as the disciple of the tree, he should learn to dedicate himself to others.
So you see, Shashvat Pararta Sarveha Parartai Ekanta Sambhava. From mountain he is learning the lesson of how one should dedicate all one's efforts for others. Sarva Iha Parartai Kanta Sarveha means all of one's efforts. Para Artha Ekanta, for the sole purpose of benefiting others. He learns his lesson from the mountain, and then from the tree he learns the lesson of dedicating oneself without protesting. Because in the case of the difference between the mountain and tree, both mountain and tree, they are actually helping others. But in the case of the tree, although some people cut the tree and then take away, but the tree does not protest. Without protesting, it is helping others. In the case of mountain, that possibility is not there. They cannot tell. Because some Kali Yuga, they break the mountains also, that's another thing. But usually they don't damage the mountain. So the second is dedicating oneself without protesting. So one may say, actually tree is an unconscious thing. How can a person learn lesson? Mountain is an unconscious thing. And tree is the living entity. Like when a person commits a sinful activity, then a person actually gets the body of a tree. What can we learn from mountain and tree, one may say, like. But then, this is actually the vision of a devotee, that he sees everything in connection to Krishna, in the sense like, how I can learn some qualities which will actually help me to actually intensify my remembrance of Krishna, intensify my service to Krishna. So, one thing we see here is that, here this Avadhut Brahmana is learning, is seeing so many people, and he is actually, he is very thoughtful and he is learning so many lessons. So especially in Kali Yuga, as time is progressing, people are actually, they are not thinking much. Like previously, it would be philosophers and thinkers were there. Now hardly any thinkers and philosophers are. Because one of the reason, like the more a person deals with the machines, the more a person becomes dull. One will not be able to, there's no room for actually thinking, because it's all set and you just, the more you deal with the machine, the more you actually become dull.
Dull in
the sense that you don't think about
creativity,
introspection.
We become mechanical.
And also, if we see, like I was hearing a beautiful class, the learning process with the education system now, previously, even the games which people would play, the children would play, that would actually, by that people would learn like very important lessons for life. Like now the current education system is like you have to learn consciously. But unconscious learning, it creates greater impact in life than conscious learning. Unconscious learning creates greater impact in life than conscious learning. Like for example, previously, like if you see the children, In the young age, they would be playing, like sometimes small children would play, I don't know, in Hindi they would call pakda pakdi, like you have to, ice boy, like that somebody used to play something. Like you have to, somebody is caught, like you have to, like in our childhood, when the power would go, then one person will everyone will actually hide in different places, one person will have to go and actually find a different people. So the person actually finds the other person, then he's out, like that. So in that sense, like in the very small age, we would play this kind of games. So by that, unconsciously, a person gets the lesson that there are some rules to be followed. There are some rules to be followed in life. If a person does not follow the rules, he is out. And then, children would also play their games like, they call it goti, or going through selling
pebbles.
So like that. So by that, what a person learns is that a person learns a lesson of learning how one should focus in one's life. Because those games require, like, you have to be focused in actually in order to play. A person learns a lesson of focus. And then we also see in the Vedic culture, they would also play these dice games. Used to play in Tamil, we used to call Dayakattam, something like,
snake and ladder,
this game, even if a person has focus or if a person is actually knows the rules to be followed, you cannot become expert in how to actually throw the dice. That means by those games, what a person learns is that there are some higher factors in life. You learn that there is a daiva factor which is responsible for attaining success in life. Like we know about the five factors of action. The fifth factor is a daiva, the supreme law. So without the daiva factor, one cannot attain success. In that sense, unconsciously we learn these things from these games. But the modern education system is such that when you consciously try to memorize something, it becomes actually a burden on the person, and then people forget afterwards. You consciously try to memorize for the, just before the exam, just vomit out, and then after that you forget. But the Vedic culture is like, every day you keep reciting shlokas, and then unconsciously a person memorizes everything. So the unconscious learning has greater impact. But the main point is here is that he is actually, by seeing different things, he is thinking about these things, and then he is learning things from the tree, he is learning something from the mountain, he is learning something. So Hridayananda Maharaj writes that Madhvacharya is quoting, one should dedicate all of one's wealth and other assets to the welfare of others, and by one's acquired opulence one should especially try to please the Guru and the Supreme Lord. By developing this saintly conduct, one will become tolerant, and this will free one from the useless agitation of the material senses. So next verse. So now the next guru is Yar. So he learns two lessons from the Yar. Of course, we also see that Krishna glorified the trees. Yetavat janma safalyam dehina miha dehishu pranair arteir diyavacha shreya acharanam sada. So previous to that he said that ako yesham varam janma. So you trees are actually the most fortunate, because your entire existence is actually dedicated for the welfare of others. And then he mentioned, etava janma safalim. If a person wants to make this
birth perfect, then if every embodied soul with his life here, pranair, arthair, or with his wealth or intelligence or with his words, one should actually engage them in the service of other. By that a person can become perfect. Krishna also glorified the trees. So now the 39th to 41st verse, in three verses he is giving lessons from the year. There are three lessons from the year and he gives from 39 to 41st verse. So 39th verse. Pranavrityaiva santushyen munir naivendriya priyai jnanam yatana nashyeta navakiryeta vanmanaha.
A learned says should take his satisfaction in the simple maintenance of his existence and should not seek satisfaction through gratifying the material senses. In other words, one should care for the material body in such a way that one's higher knowledge is not destroyed and so that one's speech and mind are not deviated from self-creation.
So, the 39th verse, he is learning lesson from the internal year. The life here which is there within the body. And the 40th verse he is learning lesson from the external here. And then from the 41st verse he is learning lesson from the external here. But a different lesson. So here the 39th verse he is learning the lesson of satisfaction from the internal here. So what essentially he is saying is that air is actually the prana or life here. It operates by eating and other actions. And prana is not dependent on other sense objects like form or sound. Prana, life here is dependent basically the energy from the eating. It's not dependent on other sense objects. So similarly, one should be actually one should learn satisfaction from the life here. Just like the life here is not going after other sense objects, so one should be satisfied with whatever he has. But that is considered to be the austerity of the mind. Mana prasada saumyatvam. Austerity of the mind is to be satisfied. So why one should learn this lesson? So he says that one should care for the material body in such a way that one's higher knowledge is not destroyed and so that one's speech and mind are not deviated from self-realization. So here Hridayananda Maharaj writes an important point. So he says that one must maintain the body by one's regulated activities of eating, mating, sleeping and defending. If a person eats too austerely or in the name of selflessness one accepts impure food, then one loses control of the mind. On the other hand, if a person eats excessively fatty food, then there is an unwanted increase in sleep and semen, and thus the mind and speech will be overwhelmed by the modes of passion and ignorance. So basically he says that when a person eats rich food or when a person eats impure food, by that the mind and speech will get affected. And when the mind and speech will get disturbed, then the knowledge will be destroyed. Higher knowledge will be destroyed. So that is the point he makes.
Satisfaction from the inner
air, how is it? Just like air is not actually going after other sense objects like form or sound. It is just satisfied with the sense object of the food. By eating, the life here remains in the proper condition. It's like it is not going after other sense objects. So similarly, we should be satisfied with with our own quota and not put excessive effort for. That's what I'm saying. Inner life here is nourished by the food we eat. So life here is not nourished. by the sound, like a sound, other sense objects, the different sense objects. One of the sense objects like food. That's like life here is not going after other sense objects for nourishment. It is just satisfied with the nourishment which he gets from eating the food. Similarly, we learn satisfaction from it. We are satisfied with whatever our quota, and go after other things.
When you don't do any extra and always think about that, sweet.
Not only with eatable, it is in actual the principle of satisfaction with respect to like everything. With it, it would be with money or post or something. It could be anything. Clothes.
Minimum requirement.
Just clarification. Mountain, trees and earth, they are categorized as one group.
But they are all representative of the earth.
And tolerance of happiness, what do you mean the tolerance of happiness?
Because they're not getting elated. Not getting elated.
Don't get excited.
And
jump and dance and celebrate.
Okay.
Everybody
seeks
for happiness.
So basically the Prabhupada writes in this purport about the importance of regulating one's eating and bodily acts. So the result of excessive sense gratification is that a person loosens one's gravity and seriousness in spiritual life and acts like an ordinary materialist. So we may go through the purports, but there are many beautiful points in the purport. I will not go through everything. So 40th verse, you can read the translation, 40th verse.
Even a transcendental is surrounded by innumerable material objects which possesses good and bad qualities. However, one who has transcended material good and evil should not become entangled even when in contact with material objects, rather he should act with the world.
So here, this is like external air, it goes through different situations. Sometimes it goes to a forest, or sometimes it goes to a, goes through some place which has like bad smell. But then the air does not get affected by those, does not become attached to those situations. Similarly, a transcendentalist air, a person may go through different situations, but one should not become attached to the situations. And a devotee should fix his mind on Krishna, and he should not become very anxious or frightened by going through different situations. So there is a beautiful verse in the fourth canto. Dayaya sarva bhuteshu santushtyo yena kenava sarvendriyo upashantyacha tushyat ashu janardana. So Narada Muni is telling to Prachetas, the best way to please the Lord is actually by showing compassion to others. But in order to show compassion to others, one has to be satisfied in any situation. Dayaya sarva bhuteshu. But in order to be satisfied in any situation, one's senses should be controlled. If the senses are not controlled, one cannot be satisfied in any situation. But in order for the senses to be controlled, one's mind has to be fixed on Krishna. One's mind has to be controlled. So in that sense, he is relating that when the mind is controlled, then senses will be controlled, and then a person can be satisfied in any situation. Then a person can actually reach, show compassion to others, and by that a person can quickly please the Lord. Tushyati Ashu Janardana. This is 4th canto, 31st chapter, this verse. So, you can read the 41st verse translation.
Although a self-given soul may live in various material bodies while in this world, experiencing their various qualities and functions, he is never entangled. Just as the wind which carries various aromas does not actually mix with them.
So, like, one may wonder, like, how a person can remain undisturbed in any circumstance. Because the life here, the previous verse, the external air, it goes through different situations, but the air does not become attached to different sense objects or things. So, especially when a person has a sense of purpose in his life, and when a person develops a sense of urgency, then a person can remain undistracted, undisturbed in any circumstance. Sense of purpose and urgency. There is one article I was reading. One person had written, he was writing about the Second World War, the victims of the concentration camps. The Hitler, how he tortured the Jews by putting them in the concentration camps. So that person was saying, so different people were actually tortured, but some people, they were physically healthy, in the sense they were given inhuman treatment, but then physically they were somewhat healthy. But because they did not have a sense of purpose in life, sense of meaning in their life, although physically, according to their medical this thing, they were supposed to live much longer, but because of lacking the sense of purpose in life, they died much earlier. And then he also another, there are other people who are like much more physically weak, but because they were having a sense of meaning and purpose in their life, they actually ended up staying much longer. They survived the concentration camp and then they stayed much longer. So his point is that how having a sense of meaning or purpose in life, when we do not have that, then a person actually goes into depression. That is one of the main cause of depression. Main cause of depression is like not having purpose in our life or some meaning in life. So in that sense, when we have a sense of purpose and urgency, then that will keep us undistracted in any circumstances. So now in the 41st verse, the lesson which he is telling about from the wind is that the wind does not mix with the good or bad fragrance. The lesson he is telling from this verse is that similarly, one should be unattached to the qualities of one's own body. Okay. In the previous verse, he talked about how one should be unattached to different situations, or one should be unattached to the different sense objects he may meet. Sometimes here, say like a devotee may be distributing books in a very nice, peaceful country atmosphere. Sometimes he may be distributing books in a hellish city. Like external situation, one should not be distracted by the external situation. Now, 41st verse is about how one should not be unattached to the qualities of the body, our own body. So, he says that we go through different phases from childhood to boyhood to old age, disease, death. Sometimes we get diseases or old age. One should not become disturbed by our own qualities of the body, which is actually changing. And Hridayananda Maharaj adds one more point in the purport, the lesson. He says that how one should not judge a devotee by the external body. One should not be attached to the qualities of the body, and also do not see others, especially a devotee, in terms of bodily designation. He adds this one more lesson. So, and 42 and 43. So now the next guru is the lesson from ether. So he learns two lessons from the ether, from 42 and 43. He learns about the nature of Paramatma and Atma from the ether. Antarhitascha stirajangameshu Brahmatma bhavena samanvayena Vyaptya vyavachedam asangamatmano Munir nabastvam vidatasya bhavayet.
Sage, even while living within a material body, should understand himself to be pure spirit soul. Similarly, one should see that spirit soul enters within all forms of life. both moving and non-moving, and that the individual souls are thus all pervading. The sage should further observe that the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a super soul is simultaneously present within all things. Both the individual soul and the super soul can be understood by comparing them to the nature of the sky. Although the sky extends everywhere and everything rests within the sky does not mix with anything, nor can it be divided by anything.
So here he is learning about the nature of Paramatma, and also we can say nature of Atma. So Vyaptya, the Vidadasya Bhavayet. Bhavayet means one should meditate upon. The yogi should meditate upon Paramatma. Like by seeing the qualities of the ether, he is understanding the nature of Paramatma. So what is the quality of the ether? Like ether is actually, ether exists everywhere, inside and outside of everything. Even in a place where air is not there, still the ether is there. Because ether is the, like the foundational element in which everything is resisting, everything is resting. Although the air exists within the sky is different from the air. Even in the absence of the air, sky is present. It means like sky is present within everything and also outside everything, even where the air is not present. So similarly, Paramatma is present everywhere, inside and outside of everything. Antarhitascha sthirajangameshu, in all the moving and non-moving living entities. And another quality of Paramatma is avyavachedam. Paramatma is undivided. That means the same Paramatma is there in all living entities. Same Paramatma is there in all living entities. And third quality is asangam. Paramatma is completely detached. Although Paramatma is there in different living entities, but Paramatma is not attached to a particular body or something. So, ether is also detached. Ether is actually undivided. It is all pervading, undivided and unattached. These are three qualities of the ether. All pervading, undivided and unattached. So similarly, Paramatma is also all pervading, undivided. Same Paramatma is there everywhere, and Paramatma is detached, unattached. So these three qualities one should learn from the ether. And Hridayan Maharaj says that this verse can also be applied to the soul. Soul is also all pervading, in the sense that soul is there in all different living entities. In the case of Paramatma, the same Paramatma is there in everywhere. But in the case of the soul, the different souls are there, but the soul is there everywhere. Nitya Sarvagatam Sthanu, Krishna says that. Soul is there in all different kinds of bodies. Soul is also in the sense all pervading, and soul cannot be divided into multiple this thing. This sense is undivided, and soul is actually detached from the body. So in that sense we can learn the quality of the soul also. The 43rd verse, again he is actually comparing, he is learning from the ether. He says that in the case of the ether, when the clouds blown away the wind, the clouds are blown away by the wind, but ether is not affected. Clouds are blown away by the wind, but the ether is not touched by the clouds blown by the wind. So similarly, from this quality of the ether, jiva is not touched by the body made of fire, water and earth by time factor. The spirit soul is not actually affected by the body made of this thing. So why we become affected? Because of the misidentification with the material body. Otherwise, the spirit soul, when a person does not identify, one will not get affected. Because of misidentification, one gets affected. So there's one point which, the previous verse, he learns the quality of the Paramatma from the ether, how the Paramatma is all pervading, undivided and unattached. And in this verse he is learning the truth about the soul from ether, how the ether does not get affected when the clouds are blown away by the wind. Similarly, the soul does not get soul is untouched by the material body, which is composed of earth, water, fire, air and ether, and which is actually produced by time factor. So Hridayanand Maharaj writes quotes Madhvacharya and tells one point. He says Madhvacharya is saying this is the divine quality of the soul is that the soul is actually untouched by the material body. But in order to revive these qualities, in order to revive this divine quality, one has to struggle in order to revive these divine qualities. One has to struggle hard. That means one has to perform sadhana bhakti. One has to lead the right culture in order to revive these divine qualities, in order to manifest these divine qualities. But in the case of Paramatma, he does not have to struggle. He is always exhibiting these qualities. So, I'll just take a 5 minutes break. If somebody wants to pass water or something, can go. And meanwhile, exactly in 5 minutes we'll start. Somebody has any points, we can.
Yeah, Yadu dynasty is. This Yadu Maharaj is. Krishna is telling.
Krishna comes the Yadu dynasty.
Yeah. So Yadu Maharaj is before Krishna.
Krishna comes the Yadu dynasty.
So this meeting of Avadhut Brahmana by Yadu Maharaj before Krishna.
Yadu Maharaj is one of the forefathers of Krishna. The Yadava dynasty. Krishna appeared. You see in the 9th canto, and Maharaj Ayati wanted to exchange his old age with the youth of his sons. Four of his sons disobeyed. Only the Puru actually obeyed. So two of the sons disobeyed because they wanted to enjoy sense gratification. Three of the sons. And Maharaj Yadu disobeyed because he knew that in the future I have to perform the service of Krishna is going to appear in my dynasty. That if I exchange my youth with this old age, then I will not be able to perform this service. So father purpose, he actually disobeyed his father. So Krishna, therefore, although he disobeyed his father, Yadu is called as Dharmashila. Parishit Maharaj, Yadoshcha Dharmashilasya Nitaram Muni Sattamalika. 10th canto, 2nd verse, the Parishit Maharaj is saying that Yadu is a Dharmashila. Please actually narrate the activities of Krishna who appeared in the Yadu dynasty. So, Yadu Maharaj is one of the forefathers of Krishna. So he is narrating.
And Avanti Brahmana?
Avanti Brahmana? So Yadu Maharaj meets his Avanti Brahmana. So he is just. Avanti Brahmana comes later. This is Avadhut Brahmana. The name is not mentioned, just Avadhut Brahmana. In this Avanti Brahmana, Krishna will tell about the realization of Avanti Brahmana, one of the later chapters. Few chapters later it comes.
So that also during the time of Yadu's
Avanti Brahmana. That I don't know where, when it took place. Usually Srimad Bhagavatam does not focus upon when it took place.
Lessons.
I don't know exactly in which yuga Avanti Brahmana at this one. Especially if you see our unconscious, because of the conditioning of the Western education, most of the questions are like when it took place, when it happened. So, but in the Vedic education, they are not concerned about like when it took place, concerned about like what I can learn from them. Because I'm not saying that sometimes you may be required to know the technical this one. But maybe I don't know, as mentioned, I'm not remembering when it took place. But, what's your comment?
All the sports from
Coco,
we can learn about reincarnation.
From
Coco? Coco is there, touch. Then some changes.
Oh, okay.
I think I read in one of the books from Vedic culture. And from
We have to do whatever is necessary on the practical level.
But not internally. And last point is, the journey describes everything like this. I think Maharaj is also learning everything. Before he came to Krishna, learning from the mangoes also, the patient. Truly, how does this happen? Is it because of past karma?
Which happened?
Maharaj is also learning a lesson. In fact, in Bible it is said that you can learn from your ants. So, Maharaj is also learning.
It is basically, as I mentioned, is the focus on the learning disposition. Like, we may not meet such, we may not encounter some such miracles in our life, but the main point is that if we have a learning disposition, we can learn in any situation. If you have a learning disposition, Krishna will actually, it's not that some miracle will happen or something. But all these things which Avadhut Brahmana is not showing, is not telling some miracle stories. He's just telling, oh, what I learned from ether or water or air or something. The focus on the learning disposition of it.
Bible it is said that you can learn cooperation and coordination and planning from ants. Krishna has everywhere the lessons are there. But I think Western education kills that spirit.
So we'll continue. So now 44th verse. So next 4th guru is water. From the water, there is one verse dedicated to water, 44th verse. From water he learns the nature of a saintly person. It's a very beautiful verse. Swachya prakriti tapsnigdo. Madhurya stirta burnana Muni punati apamitram Iksho pasparsha kirtanai.
O king, a saintly person is just like water because he is free from all contamination, gentle by nature, and by speaking creates a beautiful vibration like that of flowing water. Just by seeing, touching or hearing such a saintly person, the living entity is purified, just as one is cleansed by contact with pure water. Thus, a saintly person, just like a holy place, purifies all those who contact him because he always chants the glories of the Lord.
So here he learns different qualities of a saintly person, nature of a saintly person from seeing water. So water essentially it is pure by nature. Similarly, saintly person is pure by nature. Swachya, uncontaminated or pure. And second quality is that water is very soft. Snigdha, saintly person is soft hearted or is gentle by nature. That also he learns from water. Water is not like rough and tough like some stones or something like hard and tough. Like water is actually soft. And third is that water makes some nice pleasing sound vibration. So similarly, saintly person's speech is very sweet. One place Prabhupada writes the 7th canto purport that if one tries to understand the discourses given by the pure devotees, those instructions will be pleasing to the ear and appealing to the heart. Pleasing to the ear and appealing to the heart. As another place, when Prithu Maharaj was speaking to the four Kumaras, So explained that the Sanat Kumara, after hearing the speech of Prithu Maharaj, which was meaningful, appropriate, full of precise words and very sweet to hear, smiled with full satisfaction and began to speak as follows. Prithu Maharaj's speech was meaningful, appropriate, full of precise words and very sweet to hear. So this is the third quality from the saintly person. That is about the sweet speech. And the fourth quality is that the saintly, whoever comes in contact with water, that also gets, object gets purified. That's why the Vedic culture is like coming in contact with water, you purify yourself. But of course now the material culture is that, material culture, if there is water in the bathroom or something, that's considered a person is uncivilized or something like that. They don't consider water as a purifying agent. So water is actually a purifying agent. And similarly, by coming in contact with the saintly person, by seeing him or touching him, or by glorifying him, a person gets purified. Iho pasparsha kirtanai. And one more point which is added here is one more point which is explained is that Hridayananda Maharaj says that apam mitram, in some readings this word is also called as agat mitram. Aga means since. The saintly person, by accepting others as his own friends, he actually frees them from the sinful reactions. So he mentions a beautiful statement. He says, a conditioned living being is always lusty for material sense gratification, and if he does not acquire it, he becomes angry. Sometimes he is so obsessed with the fear of losing his material gratification that he enters a stage approaching madness. But by the contact with the saintly person, a person actually gets purified of these tendencies. Yeah, the one more point that a saintly person, how is it that he gets the power to purify others? Because he always chants the glories of the Lord. Iho pasparsha kirtanai. So one meaning of Iho pasparsha kirtanai is that by glorifying or by touching or by coming in contact with a saintly person, a person gets purified. Another meaning is that because a saintly person is always glorifying the Lord, he purifies anybody who comes in contact with. So these are two meanings. So now the next guru is from fire. So there are four verses dedicated to fire. 45, 46, 47 and 49. 48th verse is about moon. But these four verses, 45, 46, 47 and 49. These are lessons from fire. You can read the translation, 45th verse.
Saintly persons become powerful by execution of austerities. Their consciousness is unshakable because they do not try to enjoy anything within the material world. Such naturally liberated sages accept foodstuffs that are offered to them by destiny. And if by chance they happen to eat contaminated food, they are not affected, just like fire, which burns up contaminated substances that are offered to.
So, in this verse, there are three qualities of a fire is described. From that, he learns again three qualities of a saintly person. So, first is that fire glows very brightly. Similarly, a saintly person glows because of his austerity. Tejasvi tapasa deepto. And second quality is that fire is actually unagitated or unshakable. So similarly, a saintly person is unagitated because he does not try to enjoy. And there is an enjoyment propensity, then a person becomes agitated. But he does not try to enjoy. And because he just eats whatever is needed to maintain the body and soul, he is actually unagitated. So Hridayananda Maharaj writes one more point. He says, Udara Bhajana means saintly person eats only whatever is required to keep the body and soul together. But sometimes one should also eat palatable foodstuffs in order to keep the mind in cheerful condition. But one should not eat luxuriously because this will cause sex desire and laziness. A saintly person is always a perfect gentleman and is never greedy or lusty. So the second quality from the fire, how unagitated, because he just eats whatever is needed to maintain the body and soul together. And third quality of fire is that the fire is uncontaminated even when it contacts impure things. Similarly, even if a saintly person eats contaminated food sometimes, but he doesn't get contaminated. It's like sometimes people quote Vishwamitra ate meat and sometimes people say, oh, previously in Vedic scriptures Brahmanas would eat meat, like they would say, like, but then they also had the power to digest, not just the external food, they had the power to digest the sinful reaction, the reaction to it. That's a particular way to do this thing. But you cannot, like, the tendency of a conditioned soul is that they want to follow the rules and regulations of some other time and some other place, instead of following that time, the rules of their time and their own place. So Vishwamitra ate meat and there was nothing available just to maintain the body and soul. He actually ate meat. But he had the power to actually digest the sin also. So we cannot see one incident in isolation. The Prabhupada said, one devotee used to go to Russia. They said that there's no vegetarian food available. So Prabhupada said that eat meat but preach Krishna consciousness. When you preach, that will protect you from even that. In the sense, but you should not understand this. Like, we have to understand that particular time, place and circumstance. In an emergency case, because Prabhupada wanted to spread Krishna consciousness, it was an emergency, so he told them to go there. So now the next verse is Kvachit channa kvachit spashta Upasya shreya icchatam Bhumte sarvatta datrinam Dahan prag uttarashubham.
For the welfare of the conditioned soul who desire real happiness, a saintly person may accept the worshipable position of spiritual master. And thus, like fire, he burns to ashes all the past and future sinful reactions of his worshippers by mercifully accepting their offerings.
Yeah, just before this verse, one more point related to the previous verse I wanted to mention. One more quality of the fire is that when you are dealing with the fire, you have to actually deal very carefully. So he is actually mentioned three qualities about the nature of a saintly person. Another fourth point is that how one should not deal with the saintly person carelessly, just like one should not deal with the fire carelessly. Yadu dynasty. So in the sense, when we deal with the saintly person or with the deity, spiritual master, one should deal actually very carefully. So Prabhupada writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu, when you would come to take darshan of Lord Jagannath, he would actually always take darshan from standing near Garuda Stambha, not enter the. But once he actually entered the temple, because after the 15 days of Annavasara period, Annavasara, no, it's called, right, during the, after the Snanyatra, Jagannath is sick for some time, and then the Mahaprabhu goes to Alarnath for 15 days, and then after 15 days when he comes, when he comes to take darshan, so that time it is described that Mahaprabhu entered, his eyes were actually completely conquered with the beauty of Jagannath, and he entered right in the altar. So Prabhupada writes a purport there that usually Mahaprabhu would not actually enter, but because of the separation, and then when there is a union, he became overwhelmed with that ecstasy, and because of that, he actually he did not follow. He broke the maryada. He's like he broke the normal principle which he would follow of taking darshan from the Garuda Stambha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu crossed the meeting hall and entered the room where the food was offered, just to see Lord Jagannath. And this action is called Maryada Langan, a violation of regulative principles. But this was made by Mahaprabhu because of his ecstasy. And then Prabhupada explains, usually Mahaprabhu would not enter. So therefore, similarly, sometimes coming too near the deity or the spiritual master degrades the neophyte devotee. And the personal servants of the deity and the spiritual master should therefore always be very careful, for negligence may overcome them in their duty. So one should be careful. We sing in the Guru Puja. So 46th verse, there are two more lessons about the nature of a saintly person. One lesson is that saintly person, sometimes he remains concealed and sometimes he exhibits. Just like a fire, this is from the quality of fire. Fire sometimes is concealed, and then sometimes the fire actually blazes forth. We see sometimes there is no fire in a particular place, but actually there is, it is burning within. Similarly, a saintly person remains concealed and he exhibits himself when there is a need to preach. When Chitraketu Maharaj met Narada Muni and Angir Rishi, when they gave instructions, after hearing from them, Chitraketu Maharaj said, I think you both have come here dressed like avadutas just to cover your identities. But I see that of all men, you are the most elevated in awareness. And you know everything as it is, therefore you are the greatest of great personalities. So he said, by hearing from them, he could understand that they are actually great personalities. So say, and then another this thing is that upasyam shreya ichyatam. That means saintly person is worshipped by people who desire highest benefit, shreya ichyatam. And then how saintly person purifies everyone by accepting, just like a fire burns to ashes all the past, burns to ashes everything. Similarly, saintly person purifies all the past and future sinful reactions by mercifully accepting their offerings. So Prabhupada writes here that usually when a neophyte devotee, he gets some offerings or gifts from others, he becomes little flattered, he gets carried away. But a saintly person, he accepts the praise offered by his conditioned followers, knowing that in fact all praise is meant for the Supreme Lord. And a saintly person is able to burn the reactions of people who are giving their gifts because of his attachment to the Lord. So next verse, the
sins
next...
Sins means what word? Unmatured sins? You say that it was past and future sins, which is not fructified. Those also, it's an entire sins will be
Basically, the point is that because they are attached to the absolute truth, therefore they are able to purify. So 47th verse, he is learning two more lessons from the fire. So now here he is learning the about the nature of Paramatma by seeing the fire. See, he is seeing different aspects of fire and he is learning lessons about the saintly person or Paramatma like that. So fire burns in different shapes according to the size of the woods. According to the size of the wood, it burns in different shapes. Similarly, Paramatma, but the same fire is there in all the wood, but although the external size may be different. So similarly, the same Paramatma is there in everyone's body, but although the body may look different, but the same Paramatma is there. And the second lesson from the fire is that sometimes the fire is there within the wood, but how is that fire brought out? By rubbing each other, the fire is brought out. So similarly, the Lord is present, the Paramatma is there in everyone's heart. By the process of hearing and chanting, the Supreme Lord becomes manifest. So that is another lesson. So then the 48th verse is the lesson from the moon. Lesson from the moon. So here the lesson from the moon is that it's like the moon actually undergoes different phases, waxing and waning. But the moon remains same only. So Hridayan Maharaj writes that actually, since moonlight is a lunar reflection of sunlight, it is understood that the moon itself does not grow or diminish. Rather, we perceive the reflection of the moon in various phases. So similarly, the body undergoes 6 changes, but the soul remains the same. Soul does not undergo the 6 changes. So he is learning the lesson of the soul by seeing the moon. So again in the 49th verse, he is again coming back to fire. So 3 verses he spoke about fire. What he learned, the nature of a saintly person, nature of Paramatma. Now he is again coming back to fire. So why is he again coming back to fire? So he is following the method called a Simhavalokana. Means like sometimes when a lion is walking ahead, and then while going ahead, it turns behind to see who is there behind. It's called lion's glance. Well, going ahead, it and turns back. Similarly, a saint, he has actually described fire and he has gone ahead to the next example of moon. But again, he is actually looking back. Have I left out something from fire? And then he is giving one more lesson from the fire. So, 49th verse. Kalena Kyoga Vegena. Bhutanam naam prabhavapyayau nitya apina drishyete atmanogner yatarchisham.
The flames of fire appear and disappear at every moment, and yet this creation and destruction is not noticed by the ordinary observer. Similarly, mighty waves of time flow constantly, like the powerful currents of river, and imperceptibly cause the birth, growth, and death of innumerable material bodies.
So we will have.
And yet the soul, who is thus constantly forced to change his position, cannot perceive the action of time.
We will have like one Prabhuji reading and one Mataji reading. One Prabhuji reading, Mataji reading. So we'll follow this for the whole later. So so it can be sequential then. Prabhuji, Mataji. So here, so the lesson from the fire here is that if you see the fire, the different flames in fire, it is appearing and disappearing at every moment. But we are not able to see that this flame is appearing and then disappearing, because of the imperceptible actions of the flames appearing and disappearing. We are not able to perceive that actually flames are taking birth and then they are actually disappearing. So similarly, our body is constantly changing. Our body is constantly changing. There is birth and death of the living entities. In this room, maybe some bacteria or something, there is taking birth and then dying. Is all happening actually. But so in one sense, even if you go to a peaceful atmosphere in a forest or something, it is not peaceful. Because at any moment, there are different living entities are fighting with each other, insects or something, and some are taking birth, some are dying, some are, so it's not peaceful in that sense. But so it's all happening, but those who are stulam, because of time, which are the speed of the wind, the constant birth and death of living entities related to oneself are not seen, just as the appearance and disappearance of flames in fire are not seen. So what is he saying is that actually at every moment birth and death are taking place. So but we are not able to see that because of the imperceptible nature of time, which is actually which is the speed of the wind. You know, something is very fastly moving, it may appear that as if it is still, nothing is changing. Suppose the fan is moving very fast, it may appear that it is still, but it's actually birth and death are happening. So the lesson he is learning is that one should learn the lesson of detachment or renunciation from fire. Because birth and death are constantly happening, so one should learn the lesson of detachment. So Hridayananda Maharaj writes this point of after you're going out.
No, no, I'll come back then, but what time are you meeting?
I'll tell after.
Lesson of detachment and?
Let's say I'm detachment only. Detachment or renunciation. So if you see that when you know the famous verse of Yudhishthira Maharaj, what is the most surprising thing in this world? Agni Agni Bhutani Kachyanti Hai Mani, says that although people, we are seeing that death is happening everywhere. Actually, Yudhishthira Maharaj is saying it is the most amazing thing that although people are seeing that death is happening, but they think that they are never going to die. So he is using a euphemism in the sense that he is trying to say is amazingly dumb. People are amazingly dumb, but he's not using the word dumb. He is saying it is so amazing that people are not able to recognize that. So that which is the most obvious, people become oblivious to the obvious fact. The obvious thing is that any moment death can come. We will also die. But we become oblivious to that reality. So the obvious thing, people become oblivious to the obvious reality. The reason is that because of the attachment. So if we see oblivious and obvious, what is the difference? So two letters, L-I, oblivious and obvious. So oblivious minus L-I is obvious. That L-I means lust-induced vision. Lust-induced illusion. It's like when a person is attached to certain things, that attachment creates such an illusion that a person becomes oblivious to the obvious reality. Like suppose if you are in a movie, in an action movie, the villain is actually shooting bullets at a hero. The bullets are going below him, above him, on the side and in front of him. But he doesn't hit him only. So similarly, we see actually death everywhere. We see the news and newspaper and everywhere we see death. But we think that we will not die.
But fact
fact is that we are moving towards death every moment. We are not able to see it. Constant change in the body.
So that is because of the illusion induced by the lust. So in that sense, so he's by seeing this quality of fire, one should learn renunciation of birth and death are actually taking place all the time. So I'll just fast forward now, because now 50th and 51st verse, there are two lessons, and then the rest of chapter is one story. I will just tell in short. So 50th verse, he is learning a lesson from the sun. The next guru is from the sun. So 50th and 51st verse, these two verses describe the lessons from the sun. So from the sun, in the 50th verse, he learns the quality of a saintly person. Sun actually evaporates water during the summer and then it gives water later. So similarly, a saintly person, he accepts different gifts from people and he also gives away the sense objects without attachment to them like the sun. The sun accepts and then gives away the water without attachment. Simply a saintly person accepts and gives away the sense objects in due course of time. So devotees of the Krishna conscious movement should not merely accumulate material wealth but should distribute the opulence of the Lord in such a way that the Krishna conscious movement spreads unlimitedly. And the next lesson from the sun is that he learns the quality nature of Paramatma from the sun. So he says that like sun reflects on different objects, different water bodies or different mirrors, etc. But less intelligent people, they misunderstand the sun to be identical with the reflection. So similarly, less intelligent people misunderstand the Paramatma to be identical with his shaktis, with his energies. Just like less intelligent people misidentify sun to be identical with its reflections, people misidentify the Paramatma to be identical with its energies. And the second quality from the sun is that although the sun reflects in many objects, but sun remains undivided. Similarly, the soul remains undivided, and the Paramatma remains undivided, the soul remains undivided. In the sense that the same spirit soul is present in different living entities. One should not judge based on the external bodily designation. Less intelligent people, they make distinction based on the external bodily situation, but then a saintly person sees the same spirit soul is present in everyone's body. Not in the sense like same soul is there, but like same spiritual spark is there. So basically in this verse what he is saying is that people misidentify the sun to be identical with its energies. Although the sun gets reflected in different objects, but the reflection is not identical with the sun. It is its energy. So similarly, less intelligent people, sthula matibir, the word used is sthula matibir means those whose intelligence is dull, they actually consider the Supreme Lord to be impersonal or material or even unknowable. This is the lesson he learns from the sun. So now in the last part of this chapter, 52nd to the 74th verse, so I will not be reading these verses, but I will just mention the story. He learns the lesson of excessive affection from the story of a pigeon. So this one guru is only described in the rest of the verses. So he is just telling a story. So basically the story is that once there was a pigeon who lived with his wife, and this pigeon was living very comfortably with his wife and was living in a particular place for several years, and the pigeon developed a lot of attraction towards the wife, And both of them, the husband, the male pigeon and the female pigeon, they became bound to each other because of their affection. Yeah, intense bond and affection arose between them. So in that, they completely forgot the Supreme Lord. They completely bound each other in affection. And then, so they would actually do all their activity. They would converse with each other. They would dine together. They would actually sleep together. They would walk together. And in this way, and also the she pigeon, she would flatteringly cajole her husband, and she would gratify her, and she would actually try to seduce the husband, and the husband would he would take lot of trouble, and because he was uncontrolled, he would take lot of trouble to actually satisfy all the desires of the she pigeon. And then in due course of time, the female pigeon experienced the first pregnancy, and then she delivered lot of eggs, and many small baby birds, they took birth. And due course of time, they started developing nice wings, and by seeing that both the husband and wife pigeon, they became they were like very much attracted, they were like they were very much affectionate to their children, and they would take great pleasure in their chirping, and this way they were absorbed in that, and they were also trying to see, they were also happy by their little attempts to actually fly. And one fine day, the male and female pigeon, they went a long distance in order to get food for their children, and for a long time they did not return. So on that day, a hunter came. The hunter put a net, and the hunter actually caught all the baby pigeons in his net. And when the male and the female pigeon, when they were actually returning, and the female pigeon, when she saw that how all her actually children are actually crying piteously, so by that the female pigeon was, she started lamenting, and when she came close, she was also caught by the hunter's net. And then the male pigeon saw that, and male pigeon, when he saw that his wife and all the children are actually caught by the hunter's net, that he actually started lamenting so piteously, and he did not notice that how the hunter is coming to catch him also. And because he was lamenting so piteously, and then he also was caught in the hunter's net. Hunter captured him also. So in this way, the lady pigeon had always allowed herself to be bound by the ropes of intense affection. Thus her mind was overwhelmed by anguish. Being in the grip of the illusory energy of the Lord, she completely forgot herself and rushed forward to her helpless children. She was immediately bound to the hunter's net. And so in this way, like, then the husband was lamenting. Husband was saying that, oh, my wife and I were an ideal match. She always faithfully obeyed me and in fact accepted me as her worshipable deity. But now, seeing her children lost and her home empty, she has left me behind and gone to heaven with our saintly children. And then at that time, the hunter actually, when he was lamenting, his mind went blank, and then he also actually fell into the hunter's net. So in this way, so the lesson is that, like, because of their excessive affection, they actually lost their lives. The lesson is that when a person is having excessively attached to the family life, one becomes disturbed at heart. And like the pigeon, he tries to find pleasure in mundane sex attraction, and busily engaged in maintaining his own family, the miserly person is fated to suffer greatly along with all his family members. I will recite the last verse of this chapter. Yaha prapya manusham lokam,
yaha prapya manusham lokam,
mukti dwaram apavritam,
mukti
द्वारम् अपावृतम्
गृहेषु
खगवत्सक्तः
तम् आरूढच्युतम् विदुः
The doors of liberation are opened wide to one who has achieved human life. But if a human being simply devotes himself to family life, like the foolish bird in this story, then he is to be considered as one who has climbed to a high place only to trip and fall down.
I'll just mention few points. I'll end the class and then we may add some more points in the next class. So basically here, of course, this theme comes again and again in the Bhagavatam about attachment to family life. So one has to, of course, we discussed previously also in the other previous Bhakti Ego classes. So when we talk about affection, ultimately affection is only for the Supreme Lord. Ultimately affection, the love is only for the Supreme Lord. And with respect to other living entities, we have to perform duty. And we may use affection as a tool in order to perform the duty. But affection is ultimately from the Supreme Lord. So we have, if you see, every living entity has got a horizontal relation and vertical relation. The vertical relation is with the Supreme Lord. And the horizontal relations are with the other living entities. It can be a husband or a wife or brother or sister, or all others are souls. So when we, the ultimate purpose of the script, the Bhagavatam or Srimad Gita, is we have to develop our love for the Supreme Lord. We have to actually consider it on a vertical relation with the Supreme Lord. But at the same time, while living in this world, we cannot neglect the horizontal relations. So what the scriptures are saying is that you harmonize the horizontal relation with the vertical relation. Means like while living in this world, we have to have a relationship with different people, but you harmonize all the relationships with the vertical relation. You make them Krishna, you make every relationship Krishna centered. So if you want, although this story is talking about excessive affection towards the family, but another side of affection is also aversion. So one is that to become excessively attached to the family, and another is like to be averse to the family. That means like to not enter the family, or to not be situated in a particular ashram. So that is also like, in one sense, you can say like another side of the same coin. So we have to like sometimes people like they become averse to the sometimes particular ashram or something. That aversion is also not good. We have to basically do the needful and perform the duties. You have to develop affection towards the Supreme Lord. Because sometimes in Kali Yuga, what may happen is that because of our karma, we may not be able to, one may not be situated from the Varnashram point of view in a particular situation, one may not be situated properly in an ashram. We put effort, but because of his karma, he may not be situated. So then one should simply concentrate on Krishna consciousness. But like sometimes, one may deliberately avoid taking shelter of an ashram. It could be the Brahmachari ashram or a Grahastha ashram. One may just avoid getting married. But the point is that in order to come to the stage of pure devotional service, we have to go through the bridge of Varnashram. To cross the ocean, we need the bridge. Without the bridge, we cannot directly jump to the other side. There is a river is there. Without the help of a bridge, we cannot directly jump. We need the bridge to actually go to the other side. But at the same time, we don't make a house in the bridge and then live in the bridge only. So what is being talked about in this story is that do not have excessive affection to the family. That means like do not make a house in the bridge and live in the bridge. The purpose of the bridge is actually go to the other side. But the other point which is not talked about is that some people who imagine that, oh, I don't need a bridge only. No, we need to be situated in a particular ashram, not that actually go to the other side. So that aversion is also not good. One is aversion to be not situated in a particular, say, ashram with Brahma. So of course, as I mentioned that in certain cases in Kali Yuga, because of the age, sometimes a person, because of his karma, after putting effort, he may not be situated properly. That is one thing. But sometimes we find they are averse to actually taking up, because when you are situated in a particular ashram, there is some responsibility. In a brahmachari ashram, a person becomes humble because of staying with other people. In a house, a person becomes humble because of staying with the wife and children. So one has to become humble, so for that one has to be situated in some ashram. So that sense, the excessive affection, what is being talked about is that making the house in the bridge and staying there. The purpose of the bridge is to actually cross over, not to actually stay in the bridge. So another thing we learned from this lesson is that the male pigeon, when he saw that the female pigeon and that all the baby children were caught in the net, now he cannot do anything. So he simply kept on lamenting, and because of that intense lamentation, he also fell into the net. So that means when there is excessive affection, a person starts also lamenting very severely, and lamentation is not going to benefit anybody. The essential message of Gita is what? Do not lament. Mashucha. See, the first verse spoken by Krishna is Ashochyan Anvashochastvam. Why are you lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief? And the last thing Krishna spoke is Mashuchaha. So Jiva Goswami quotes in the Paramatma Sandarbha. He says, by seeing the beginning and the end of the book, we can see what is the essential message of the book. The beginning is Ashochyan, do not lament. And last is also Mashucha, do not lament. Therefore, he says that this is the essential message of the Gita, that do not lament. So he mentions a beautiful point. I will end with this. So he says, beautiful purport to this verse. He explains that some devotees, when they lose their near and dear one, they definitely, it's not that do not lament means we just become stone hearted, don't have any feelings or something. Devotees definitely exhibit their emotions. So he says, although the great persons are seen to lament at times, this is merely the expression of their manifest karma exhausting itself. While they themselves know better, and remain situated in knowledge of the nature of the self, the manifest karma of the great souls expires without diminishing their greatness. He says, although lamentation is unavoidable, but the great souls teach us to pass through it without identifying with it. Lamentation is unavoidable, but one has to go through it without identifying their situation. In the case of the male pigeon, he became so much identified with the situation because of the lamentation, he also lost his own life also. So we have to witness the passing of our good and bad karma without reacting to it, then we progress in spiritual life. So the essential lesson from this is that excessive affection and which leads to lamentation, and the person actually loses his spiritual life. So ultimately the affection is meant for the Supreme Lord, and to all other living entities we may use affection as a tool. To other living entities, affection is not the goal. Affection is the tool so that we can perform our duty. But with respect to the Supreme Lord, to develop affection toward the Supreme Lord is actually our goal. right now we may be performing our bhakti in the platform of duty, but ultimately we have to develop affection towards the Supreme Lord, come to the platform of love. But in the case of the other people, the affection is only the tool so that we can perform our duty. It's not the goal. So I'll stop here. So next class, we will take this very interesting chapter of the story of Pingala. So there are some more gurus in the beginning, and then he talks about the lessons he learns from a prostitute called as Pingala. So next two classes, we'll take up this very interesting. So I'll stop here. Everybody has any questions?
Point to share, Gaurav Guru mentioned that the story of Gajendra. Gajendra was wandering, he was enjoying the night with his wife. Suddenly, this crocodile caught him. So Gaurav Guru said that this nature of this world is like Indian road. You are going smoothly, and suddenly one bump may come, and you may wonder. But this is the nature of the world. So we may get shocked that why this is happening. Everything is nice. So I think pigeon is also excellent in the story.
Similar story comes in the 7th canto, 2nd chapter, when Hiranyakashipu is preaching to his relatives. So when he is preaching, he tells another story of King Suyajna. And King Suyajna, when he died, all the queens were lamenting. They were not allowing the body of their husband to be cremated. So at that time, Yamaraj comes as a small boy in order to preach to the wives of Suyajna. And when he speaks to the voice of Suyajna, he gives instructions, and then he tells a story of Pulinga birds. So they are also exactly similar to this thing, that husband and male and female birds. They are also the same lesson. Because of excessive lamentation, that male bird also lost their life. Similarly, the Yamaraj is saying that you are lamenting, but you are lamenting excessively because of that it is not... You are not allowing your husband's body to be cremated and taken to the better destination in the next life.
Seems to be a constant theme to wake us up.
Thank you. So you can collect the last week's papers.
Gracias.